Sanjaya Jashodanandana Jaya Braja Janaranjana Jaya Braja Janaranjana Jaya Jamuna Tiravana Chari Jaya Kunja Vihari Jaya Jamuna Tiravana Chari Jaya Kunja Vihari Jaya Radha Madhava Jaya Kunja Vihari Jaya Radha Madhava Jaya Kunja Vihari
Vishnupad Paramahansa Parivraja Kacharya Ashtotara Shata Shishimad His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jayam Vishnupad Paramahansa Parivraja Kacharya Ashtotara Shata Shishimad His Divine Grace Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj Srila Prabhupada Ki Ananta Koti Vaishnava Vrinda Ki Iskon Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Ki Garantara Shriman Bhagavatam Ki Itai Gaura Premanandi. Oh, glory to the assembled devotees. Oh, glory to the assembled devotees. Oh, glory to the assembled devotees. Oh, glory to Shishiguru and Shigoranga. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 8, Chapter 15, Texts 1 through 11. Actually, none of the texts have purport, but somehow or other, that's the division. Not even, no. But what I'm going to do, I'm going to read Prabhupada's summary of the chapter, and then we'll read the verses. So I start with the summary, since Prabhupada starts like this. The chapter is entitled, Bali Maharaj Conquers the Heavenly Planets. Prabhupada writes, this chapter describes how Bali, after performing the Vishwajit Jagya, received the benediction of a chariot and various kinds of paraphernalia for war, with which he attacked the king of heaven. All the demigods, being afraid of him, left the heavenly planets and went away, following the instructions of their guru. Maharaj Parikshit wanted to understand how Lord Vamanadev, on the plea of taking 3 paces of land from Bali Maharaj, took everything away from him and arrested him. Sukadev Goswami responded to this inquiry with the following explanation. In the fight between the demons and the demigods, as described in the 11th chapter of this canto, Bali was defeated and he died in the fight. But by the grace of Sukra Acharya, he regained his life. Thus, he engaged himself in the service of Sukra Acharya, his spiritual master. The descendants of Bhrigu, being pleased with him, engaged him in the Viswajit Yajna. When this Yajna was performed, from the fire of Yajna came a chariot, horses, a flag, a bow, armor, and two quivers of arrows. Maharaj Prahlad, Bali Maharaj's grandfather, gave Bali an eternal garland of flowers, and Sukra Acharya gave him a conch shell. Bali Maharaj, after offering obeisances to Prahlad, the Brahmanas, and his spiritual master Sukra Acharya, equipped himself to fight with Indra and went to Indrapuri with his soldiers. Blowing his conch shell, he attacked the outskirts of Indra's kingdom. When Indra saw Bali Maharaj's progress, he went to his own spiritual master Brihaspati, told him about Bali's strength, and inquired about his duty. Brihaspati informed the demigods that because Bali has been endowed with extraordinary power by the Brahmanas, the demigods could not fight with him. Their only hope was to gain the favor of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Indeed, there was no alternative. Under the circumstances, Brihaspati advised the demigods to leave the heavenly planets and keep themselves somewhere invisible. The demigods followed his order, and Bali Maharaj, along with his associates, gained the entire kingdom of Indra. The descendants of Bhrigu Muni, being very affectionate to their disciple Bali Maharaj, engaged him in performing 100 Ashwamedha Yajnas. In this way, Bali enjoyed the opulence of the heavenly planets. Text number 1 and 2. We chant this one together, I believe. Sri Raja Uvacha Bale Pada Trajam Bhume Kasmas Darir Ajachata Bhuteshwara Kripa Naval Labdharto Pyevadam Ladbarto Pibadam Batam Etad Beditun Ichamo. Oh, that one is not there. Okay, I'm sorry. Okay, again. Sri Raja Uvacha Bale Pada Trajam Bhume Kasmas Darir Ajachata Bhuteshwara Kripa Naval Labdharto Pibadam Datam Bale Pada Trajam Bhume Kasmat Darir Ajachata Bhuteshwara Kripa Naval Labdharto Pibadam Datam. Please chant. Etat biditon ichamo mahatkautalam mahakautahalam hina jachetnuasarasya jachnetsuarasya purnasya bandanan chapyanagasha. Sri Raja Uvacha. The king said, Balehe of Bali Maharaj, Padatrayam, three steps, Bhumehe, the land, Kasmat, why, Harihi, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, in the form of Bhamanat, Ajachata, beg, Bhuta Ishwaraha, the proprietor of all the universe, Kripanabat, like a poor man, Laptha Artha, he got the gift, Api, although, Babanda, arrested, Tam, him, Bali, Etat, all this, Beditum, to understand, Ichamaha, we desire, Mahat, very great, Kautahalam, eagerness, he, indeed, Naha, our, Jachna, begging, Ishwarasya, of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Purnasya, who is full in everything, Bandanam, arresting, Cha, also, Api, although, Anagasaha, he who was faultless. Translation by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Maharaj Parikshit inquired, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is a proprietor of everything. Why did he beg three paces of land from Bali Maharaj like a poor man? And when he got the gift from which he had begged, why did he nonetheless arrest Bali Maharaj? I'm very much anxious to know the mystery of these contradictions. So the contradictions here is that he didn't have to ask, it was his. So why did he ask? Everything belongs to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So on her behalf, he have people managing, different personalities managing the whole creation. And he makes certain arrangements, you know. There are certain laws that control the universe. And according to, there are certain posts that you can get according to your, you know, the work that you do. But it has to be approved by him. Anyway, it's his universe. So Maharaj Parikshit wanted to know, why did he have to ask for, you know, in this way? And the way that he asked like a poor Brahmana. He begged from Maharaj Bali. And the other one was that, why did he have to arrest Bali Maharaj? Because Bali Maharaj showed that, you know, he did the right thing. He actually was very admirable the way he, acted against his whole race, his spiritual master, everything, for satisfying the request of Lord Bhamanadev, knowing by the instruction of a spiritual master that Vamanadev was Lord Vishnu and he was going to take everything. And still he acted. And so Maharaj Parikshit say, and even then Krishna, Lord Vamanadev, arrested him. So these two contradictions he was anxious to know what's the mystery behind, what's the story behind. Text number 3. Sri Shuka Uvacha Parajita Sri Parajitra Sisas Para Parajita Sir Asubis Jahapito Hindrena Rajam Brigubisha Jivata Sarvatmana Tan Abajat Brigumbali Sisyo Mahat Marta Nivedanena. Translation. Sukadev Goswami says, O King, when Bali Maharaj lost all his opulence and died in the fight, Sukracharya, a descendant of Bhrigu Muni, brought him back to life. Because of this, the great soul Bali Maharaj became a disciple of Sukracharya and began to serve him with great faith, offering everything he had. So as we remember, three chapters. So we have been hearing the narrations of Lord Shiva taking darshan and become bewildered by the Mohini Murti form of the Lord. And then after that, Maharaj Parikshit asked about the management to complete the whole explanation of all the different personalities that manage the universe. Remember the original question that Maharaj Parikshit asked at the beginning of the chapter, please tell me about all the manus and that, you know, and all the different times and manus that are there, because there's so many of them. And so the ones in the past and the ones in the future, he asked. So there was these two chapters that went through all of that, sort of completed that part of the question. And now Maharaj Parikshit wanted to complete this whole wonderful pastimes, you know, the whole arc of Maharaj Bali. And the last time we hear about Bali Maharaj was during the fight with the demigods. And we remember that he was in the battlefield basically with his mystic powers completely crushing the demigods. And the demigods then took shelter of Krishna. And actually, no, just back up a little bit. After Mohini Murti took the nectar from the demons and gave it to the demigods, the demons got, you know, we're gonna fight against them, then during that fight, was it that during that fight that he displays all this mystic opulence that, you know, I try to remember, I'm a little confused now. There was a fight before that the kingdom was getting, no, yes, it was during that fight, the fight after the nectar was taken, that Maharaj Bali displays his mystic powers. And was basically defeating. It was like the whole thing, that the whole description of, you know, a big mountain following, you know, on the top of the demigods and crushing them, you know, and all kinds of things falling from, you know, stones, fire, demons, animals, blood. You know, I mean, it was a huge display that was crushing the demigods. And just about as things was getting almost to the end of the demigods, then they call for Lord Vishnu, and Lord Vishnu immediately appears, Lord Hari in the back of Garuda, and completely destroy the illusion of the demons, of the asuras, and Lord Vishnu kills several of the great generals of the asuras, and then, you know, and also revive, re-energize the demigods. And then there is Lord Indra came and confronted Bali Maharaj and was able to kill him, defeat him. So with his weapon of the thunderbolt, he killed Bali Maharaj. So that was taken care. However, you know, the rest of the asuras took the body of Bali Maharaj and brought it to Sukracharya. And Sukracharya is a descendant of Bhrigu Muni, just like also Brihaspati. And Brihaspati is the spiritual master of the demigods. Sukracharya is the spiritual master of the asuras. And you can see the awesome powers that these great brahmanas have. They can actually bring someone back to life from death. So some of the fantasies of the demoniac, well, actually it's not a fantasy, it's based on, you know, the reality. You know, the demons have that sort of power. So now the Kali Yuga demons, they have only to dream, you know, to how to do that. So, you know, they have Frankenstein, you know, trying to bring so, you know, it's not the same result of having Bali Maharaj regain his old glories and even become more powerful. You know, rather the Kali Yuga demons, they, you know, either you become a zombie or Frankenstein, or, you know, some sort of a monster, very, you know, deformed type of creature, you know. So, however, Sukracharya had that power, bring someone back to life. And we hear several instances of great personalities that have that power. Narada Muni and Parashara Muni had that power. They brought the child Chitraketu Maharaj. He brought the child to life. Remember the circumstance that Chitraketu Maharaj, one desire, a child, he got the benediction from the sages, you know, warning him there's going to be a great sort of suffering too. I know it doesn't matter, I just want a child. So the child died by the scheme of some envious queens, and he was so miserable and so distressed. And then Narada Muni and Parashara Muni, let's bring him back to life. So they brought the child back to life, and then Maharaj Chitraketu was very happy, and he says, "Oh, my child, you're back." And the child, "Who are you?" "I'm your papa. I'm your father." So, which one? Which one of my fathers? I have so many fathers and mothers. Which one are you? So, like that. That also is an amazing story. But the capacity of bringing life back from the dead, you know, is there in these great, powerful sages. So Sukracharya was such. However, well, we touch that later as we go on reading. But so Maharaj Bali regained his life and he became a disciple of Sukracharya and became a very faithful and you know, committed disciple of Sukracharya. Text number 4. Tam brahmana brigabat prijamana ajajavam ajajan bishwajita trinakam jigishamanam bidina bisisya mahabhishekena mahabhishekena mahanubhava. Translation: the brahmana, descendant of Bhrigu Muni, were very pleased with Bali Maharaj, who desired to conquer the kingdom of Indra. Therefore, after purifying him and properly bathing him according to regulated principles, they engaged him in performing the yajna known as Viswajit. So not only Bhrigu Muni, not only Sukracharya, but also there was a whole group of brahmanas that were descendants of Bhrigu Muni. And so headed by Sukracharya, they were served by Maharaj Bali and they were very pleased with him. So Maharaj Bali's desire was to get back at Indra, conquer the heavenly planets. The main character of the Asuras. They call the enemies of Indra. It's almost like defined, you know. So there's this constant struggle between the Devas and the Asuras, the Suras and the Asuras. And the struggle is that the control of the universe, basically. So there's the dark side and there's the what's the other one? The Star Wars thing. So the dark side of the thing of the and then the good guys. Yeah, something like that. So there is the Asuras trying to control the universe. There's the Devas who have the task of controlling the universe. That's what is given to them. And the interesting thing that I find is that they both follow the rules of the universe, which is, you know, the Vedic culture, the system of yagyas. So the way things, you can access different aspects of the universe, of the facilities of the universe, is through the system of yagya. And for the system of yagya, you have, you know, they have to be brahmanas to perform the yagya. So it's not exclusively to devotees and to people, pious people, to perform yagyas. Because demons, we can see here, the asuras, they perform yagyas and they obtain the result of yagyas. This example of Jarasandha, who understood, you know, who was very charitable towards brahmanas. He was a heavy, heavy duty demon. He was charitable toward brahmanas, but he will, you know, he will conquer other kings and put them in his jail, you know, and torture them like that. So So it's not exclusive to devotees, so they follow also the system of yagyas. The difference between demons and demigods is that the demigods are devoted to Krishna, devoted to Krishna. So the demigods are given they're given the job to accept worship from others. So it's part of their pose. They accept worship. And when they accept worship, they're also given the capacity to give benedictions. And but they do have a worshipable personality, which is Lord Vishnu. So therefore, Vishnu is called Deva Deva. So is the worshipable of the worship, how do you say it, of the worshipables? Is the worshipable of the worshipables? Does that make sense? Yeah. So he's worshipped by those who are worshipped. Lord Vishnu. Deva Deva, Jagatpati. So the demigods can accept worship and can give benedictions. It's part of the system. It's part of the universal systems. That's how he works. Like I say, you know, like in the third chapter, text 10, Krishna say, demigods and men and the system of yagya. That's how he provides in the beginning of creation. So, so the demigods, they accept Krishna as the worshipable personality. And they accept worship to others on behalf of Krishna. So it's all Krishna's. Krishna is the Yagyapati, is the enjoyer of all yagyas. So the demigods accept worship on behalf of Krishna, and then all goes to Krishna. They basically pass it out. Now, sometimes we see that the demigods have the difficulty that they get sort of proud about receiving worship, and they forget that it's not worship to them, but it's worship to Krishna. It has to be passed. So the case of Lord Indra, when he was proud of receiving the worship from the inhabitants of Vrindavan, and then when the worship was stopped by Krishna, Krishna did that on purpose to actually correct Indra's pride. And then, well, you know, we know the history of the Govardhan Puja pastime. So the demigods, they accept Krishna as the supreme, and everything is for him. They're devotees. The asuras, they don't. The asuras follow the system, follow, you know, the how the universe works. They understand. They're actually quite educated on it too. The difference is that although they are opulent, knowledgeable, they understand how things work, they apply it, they take advantage of it, but they do not accept Krishna. They actually envy Krishna and have some enmity towards Krishna, towards Lord Vishnu. So they don't accept him. So so we see right now here, this is performing a yagya. He's performing a yagya for the purpose of conquering Indra. And Sukracharya and the other descendants of Bhrigu were engaged, were served by Maharaj Bali with affection, with proper, you know, with proper devotion, and being pleased, they were going to perform this yagya for fulfilling his purpose. Question is, how the Brahmanas will do this, you know, sort of like understanding the sort of character of or the purpose that Maharaj Bali had, and still perform that. It seems like, you know, their duties are not very clear, you know, or something. But there's not much explanation about the other descendants of Bhrigu, but there's explanation about Shukracharya. Shukracharya was also not favorable to Lord Vishnu. So there's such Brahmanas too, like that. So, which we can talk about it, you know, and think, but you know, it's questionable, because Brahmanas is supposed to someone who knows the value of life, someone who knows Brahman. That's the definition of a Brahmana. But you'll see, you know, there's such Brahmanas that don't have that connection with the personality of Godhead. So you can have a people who understand all the Brahmin, who have certain Brahminical powers because they follow the Brahminical culture, but don't fully get to understand the absolute truth. I think they may have access. This is how I'm trying to understand that. They may have access up to certain point, you know. So like impersonalists, you don't have full understanding, and you still have certain mystic powers, like yogis. They can have mystic powers and be very powerful, but don't have that connection with the personality of Godhead. We have examples of Durvasa Muni, who have the mystic power even to go and seek the Lord, but somehow or other we don't hear Durvasa Muni as being a representative of Lord Narayan. It's always like, you know, he's a great sage, but you know, but that connection is not explained. The fact is that he offended a great devotee of the personality of Godhead, and that's that pastime. So you know, being a Brahmana doesn't necessarily mean being a Vaishnava. That's the point. Text number 5. Tato rata kanchana patanabdo hajasta harjasya turanga varna dvajasta simhena virajamano hutasanat ashahabir birst Utashanat Ashahabir Birstad. Translation: when ghee, clarified butter, was offered in the fire of sacrifice, there appeared from the fire a celestial chariot covered with gold and silk. There also appeared yellow horses like those of Indra and a flag marked with a lion. Text number 6. Danuschu divyam purato pabnabdam tunavariktau kavacham cha divyam pitamahastasya dadau chamalam amlana pushpanjala jancha shukra. Translation. A gilded bowl, two quivers of infallible arrows, a celestial armor also appear. Bali Maharaj, grandfather Prahlad Maharaj, offered Bali a garland of flowers that will never fade, and Shukracharya gave him a conch shell. Text number 7. Evansapi prarjita jodanartas taikalpita swetayayano Tai kalpita swastya janota vipram Pradikshini kritya krita pranama praradan amritya nanas chakara. Translation: when Bali Maharaj has thus performed the special ritualistic ceremony advised by the Brahmanas and has received by their grace the equipment for fighting, he circumambulated the Brahmanas and offered them obeisances. He saluted Prahlad Maharaj and offered obeisances to him. Text 8 to 9. Ataruhya ratam divyam, brigudatam maharat maharata, srushakdarota sananya, dambi kandi date shubi, himangadala sabanhu, spuram mokara kundala, Rarajaratan arato dinyasta iva habyabat. Translation: then, after getting on the chariot given by Sukracharya, Bali Maharaj decorated with a nice garland, put protective armor on his body, equipped himself with a bow, and took up a sword and a quiver of arrows. When he sat down on the seat of the chariot, his arms decorated with golden bangles and ears with sapphire earrings, he shone like a worshipable fire. Awesome sight, a powerful warrior. Tulya Shishwara Bali Sribi Swayutai Daiti Jutapyai Pai Bibadir iba kandrik bir dahabi pari din iba brito bikarshan mahatin asurin dwajinim bibu java jajavindra purim sritam kampajan iba rodasi. Translation: when he assembled with his own soldiers and the demon chiefs, who were equal to him in strength, opulence, and beauty, they appear as if they will swallow the sky and burn all directions with their vision. After those gathering the demoniacs, after thus gathering the demoniac soldiers, Bali Maharaj departed for the opulent capital of Indra. Indeed, seems to make the entire surface of the world tremble. Can you imagine such an army? And again, the Asuras, they were very attractive, strong, opulent, and beautiful personalities. So it's not such a thing of, you know, sometimes we see the depiction in paintings of Asuras, you know, these things with fangs and, you know, like some sort of monsters like that. But that may be a depiction of their qualities, you know, like the character, but not a depiction of their external, you know, body like that. It's a very graphic description, and you can only imagine such a beautiful sight of warriors, you know, readying themselves from war and advancing, you know, towards the enemy, you know, approaching the capital of Lord Indra. And the surface of the earth would tremble just by their advance. So we will hear how when the demigods saw this coming, it was not, you know, the picture of Lord Indra, you know, chastising Bali Maharaj the last encounter that he had. He was like taking it back, because, you know, how he appeared in this powerful chariot. So by Prabhupada explains, by the advice of Brihaspati, they have to vacate. They don't even fought back. They just took off. They hid himself. The best thing, you know, let Lord Vishnu take care of these guys. Again. So the demigods always have to remember, you know, they're reminded constantly. I think, you know, you have that force of the asuras constantly harassing and you know, making the whole life for the demigods that is not a perfect, you know, Vaikuntha life. They're full of anxiety. The only place that is beyond anxiety is the spiritual world, is Vaikuntha. Otherwise, they're always anxious. And we see it throughout. Lord Indra is anxious. Lord Indra is anxious not only of asuras attacking, but he's anxious of anything that seems to be, you know, like really getting power, getting some power. So this struggle for control is pretty intense up there too. It's not only pretty intense in here, in this realm, but it's pretty intense in the heavenly planets with the asuras and the suras, the demigods and the demons. So Bali Maharaj, you know, is gonna take the whole kingdom of heaven. And with the help of Brahmanas, he will become, you know, him and the whole Asuric race, you know, will become a very powerful and prosperous. So that's kind of what I can say on this series of verses with no purpose. Any comment or questions? Start with Marcel Prabhu.
Hare Krishna Prabhu, thank you for the class. I was just curious because the demons, they have a spiritual master. So is that spiritual master bona fide, or like, because if they're listening to the spiritual master, they'd probably direct them towards Vishnu, but since they're all completely envious of Krishna, how does that really work?
Yeah, there is this verse that say, do not become a spiritual master, do not become a father, do not become a teacher, do not become a husband if you cannot deliver your dependence from the cycle of birth and death. So Sukracharya fell from his position because of he was afflicted by selfish motivation, some personal interest. Although he could recognize Lord Vishnu, Sukracharya, he was so powerful, you know, he was up there. He was a very powerful Brahmana. So when he saw Lord Brahmana, he saw it's Lord Vishnu. So he was not, he recognized. And even after that, he says, do not give him anything. Do not engage him, because he will take everything away. You know, and that's when Bali Maharaj made his choice. Bali Maharaj was able to recognize, okay, he's a fallen guru. Because, you know, so far, the whole, remember, they using, the asuras are still using Krishna's system. They performing jagyas, they're engaging brahmanas, etc., etc. And in the sacrifices, you have to address Lord Vishnu as the Yajñapati. It's just part of the system. So, you know, they use it for the purposes. It's almost like, you know, there's certain corporations and CEOs, and they understand how the system works, and they take advantage of them for their personal, you know, purpose. So, you know, we don't know that, you know, and many, the whole, this loop in the law and this and that, and then, you know, they don't pay taxes. Like they were saying that, you know, like how in the world someone loses $1 billion and is able to go, you know, sort of like continue flourishing in their business. Is what happened to Donald Trump, apparently. He lost $1 billion, you know, he went bankrupt and then continued his business happily. And then because he lost that, then he doesn't have to pay some loop that he doesn't have to pay taxes, something like that, some story like that. So they use the law, they use the thing, you know, and they try to go along. So so Bali Maharaj recognized, you know, we are supposed to give in charity to Lord Vishnu because you're receiving, you know, it's a system. And now that he comes, you tell me not to. So no, I'm going to do it. So he rejected Sukracharya. Sukracharya coercing, you know, you're going to lose everything. Fine, you know, if it's a, you know, it's the right thing to do. Yeah. Jordan.
Hare Krishna. I'm trying to understand the difference between like the hellish planets, like where people go to like suffer, compared to like where these demonic powerful demons live. Is there a difference? Are they also in the hellish planets, or are they seem to live for a long time, and they're not exactly like suffering necessarily, just like the results of bad karma.
Yeah, there are some heavenly regions under, you know, in the underworld. There is described. There is regions that are opulent, like very opulent, and that's where, in my understanding, that's where the asuras, you know, live. And many of the things that they have is machines. They're very, very good at, you know, mechanical things, machines, is something that I remember. They're not the hellish planets that we know, that we listen or that we hear about. You know, that they're places of punishing and suffering. You can understand that like jails, you know, like you send someone to jail. It's a specific, it's very specific. So there are specific regions in which sinful souls goes to, you know, suffer the result of the sins. But they are heavenly regions under, you know, in the lower planetary systems. That much I can say. Yes, Shankar Pandey Prabhu can complete that.
I just was wondering, like they live for a long time, so they're like similarly to the heavenly planets, like they also live for like a long time.
I'm not sure. Maybe Shankar Pandey Prabhu can answer that. I would say so, you know,
The Srimad Bhagavatam, fifth canto, describes the structure of the universe. And within this particular structure of the universe, there are different planetary systems that are mentioned. So within this particular universe, there is a region where the demons are residing. It is called the subterranean planetary system. It is different from Yamaloka, or where the sinful living entities meet their punishment. They're very distinct planetary divisions. So where the demons reside, yes, it appears to be very heavenly, because they also have many demoniac associates who are expert in architect, just as Subha Prabhu was mentioning. Like Maya Danava is very expert in assisting the demons and creating fantastic facilities for enjoyment. So although where the demons reside, it appears to be heavenly, but it is temporary and full of suffering. Therefore, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Abrahma Bhuvana Loka Purna Avartino Arjuna, that if one is promoted to the topmost planet within creation, Brahmalok, or the abode of Lord Brahma, which is fantastic in terms of enjoyment, longevity, etc., one will still find birth, death, old age, and disease existing. So this phenomenon is existing throughout the creation. So even where the demons reside, the lower planetary systems, yes, opulence is there because the demons are very expert in enjoying those senses. But that opulence is temporary and it is full of misery. Where the living entities go for punishment because of their previous karma, that is the jurisdiction of Yamaraj, Yamaloka, completely different planetary system. And although there are different types of hellish planet, it is temporary. The reactions to one's sinful activities are temporary, although very severe, given the nature of the activity. So within this material world, one will find these basic problems of birth, death, existing. Therefore, another word for this cosmic manifestation is Mrityu Loka. It is a planet of death. It is a universe of death. And that is all-pervading. So these different planetary divisions are there. They exist. We shouldn't think that it is imagination or mythology. These planetary systems exist. But we are certainly being trained to transcend material nature and enter into the spiritual domain where the Lord is existing eternally in loving relationships with his devotees. So yes, there is a distinction from where the demons live and where the living entities go for their karmic punishment.
Thank you, Guru. Jai Baladev.
Hare Krishna, Guru. Thank you for your class. You were mentioning that the Brahmanas were very powerful back then, that they could literally bring people back to life, like Shukracharya. And the reason I appreciate this point, because I'm sure we can all agree that in our spiritual life, that before we came to Krishna consciousness, we felt dead, and our whatever gurus brought us back to life. For me, I feel indebted to my brother, and of course, the many other people who helped me. So, so my question is that, not from the perspective of being brought back to life, but sometimes we put our position in a position of Shukracharya. Now, in this verse, it says Shukracharya brought Bali back to life. But there's so many verses that says Krishna's the ability in man. Whatever powers we have, Krishna Shakti Vina Nahiri Sara Pravartana, that he gives everyone the ability, any ability. So actually, Krishna, the one who brought Bali back to life. So in our spiritual life, the tendency is that when we bring someone to Krishna consciousness, we take credit. I brought him back to life. And there was one example that Prabhupada gave when he's speaking to a scientist, very vivid example for someone who even doesn't believe in God. It was a very nice example. The lecture is called Scientists Who Created Your Brain. He says, he was speaking to a scientist, he says, you are a scientist, you have a good brain, but you cannot manufacture the brain. But who has manufactured your brain? So his concluding statement was that we are glorifying the brains of the scientists, but we are not glorifying the brain of the scientist who has made the brain of the scientists. So I appreciate that point. So my question essentially is that how can we give up this mentality that when we preach to someone, just like Shukracharya said, don't listen to Vishnu. So the tendency is that in our spiritual life, when we bring someone to Krishna consciousness, we feel like they're the owner of that person. And therefore, you know, nobody can speak to them except us. Of course, I'm not talking about the like a Diksha guru, but someone who may we consider equal to us, that you should only feel indebted to me because I brought you back to life. And that's bring forth, you know, aparas naturally that I save them. So can you expand on that principle? How can we keep this in mind to get with this mentality?
It's a very immature approach, or, you know, understanding. So you mature. You know, I mean, if a devotee thinks like that, it means that he's a very immature devotee. So you can expect the devotee to eventually grow to a much more mature understanding. In general, you know, when you're immature, you get corrected, either by other devotees or just by Krishna just smash you. So you know, you learn. Everybody, we all learn. We all have a learning curve, you know. When we're learning to ride a bike, we fell several times, bruise our knees, you know, and things like that. But eventually we get it going. So yeah, it's just a symptom of immaturity. You know, quite big immaturity, that's all. So we have to learn from those who are mature, and then being open to that, remember. Jitendra Prabhu?
Yes, I was, you were talking about Brahmins and Vaishnavs, the difference. There's a book out by Bhaktisiddhanta called The Brahmin and the Vaishnav. Mm-hmm. Did you ever see that book? I think we might have it in the gift store, the black covered book. Mm-hmm. So people want to, you know, get a better understanding of the difference. Thanks, Hare Krishna.
Yeah, it's quite something. It would be nice to, like, I was just, you know, as I was talking, I was just processing too, something similar to what, on the same lines of Bhakta Jordan's questions, that, you know, like, we know that when you have a person who is pious, they go up, you know, towards the heavenly regions. And when it's impious, they go down towards the hellish regions, right? So, I mean, there's more to it, but, you know, there's progressive consciousness by following religiosity, you know, piety, and by neglecting religiosity and having an impious life, then one goes down. So now, how do you get to be a demon, an asura? You know, that's a question that we'll have. How do you get, because they're living in a very opulent condition. So I guess, you know, a millionaire that does a combinations of piety and demoniac things, you get to be a demon. I never heard. Do you have anything like that, Shankar Pandit? Just in a short, you know, how you get to become a demon. Well, I mean, I'm saying, you know, how you get to those places, you know, opulent planets, you know, yeah, you know, like it's almost like, you know, it's a step up of being a demoniac, you know, opulent person here in this realm, that you go to, you know, those places of, you know, heavenly spaces. Like, you know, there's some description of those subterranean heavenly planets that are like, it's same like description of heaven. So how do you get, you know, to be, suppose that it's an upgrade from being a demon from here, like, you know, so why would you get an upgrade?
Of course, the demons and devotees of the Lord have always existed. Dwa bhuta sarga lokasmin, daiva asura evacha. So these two classes of beings have always existed. How does one become a demon? By misusing one's independence.
No, that I know. I'm saying that one is clear. I'm saying that, you know, that
and based upon one's choice, nature guides one accordingly. Kardamana daiva netrena jantur deha upapadeye. Because of our direct behavior, whether we're acting as a devotee of the Lord or non-devotee, asura, we're nonetheless subjugated by the laws of nature or the Supreme Lord. So according to our mentality, our behavior, as you correctly pointed out, we're either being elevated or degraded. So how does one go to those lower planetary systems where demons are residing? By demonic behavior, by demonic association, by demonic mentality. We're never, ever independent.
But there have to be some sort of a piety. They have to, you think that there should be some piety? I mean, these guys are following the Vedas. You know, they're following the system. So there should there be some sort of a piety to be in going to a situation in which there will be even more opulences that what you have right now, even if your mentality is demoniac?
According to their mentality, Krishna, under the arrangement of nature, is guiding them accordingly. But generally speaking, one becomes demoniac by association.
Hmm. Yeah. Krishna Archana, do you have some?
I think you raised such an interesting question. Shankaranya Prabhu answered it, very clearly. The one thought maybe to add to what he'd said was, you pointed out during the course of the class that there was the, you know, performance of sacrifice on the part of the demons. So they're very much in the Vedic system. So perhaps that sheds some light on the question you raised, because and taking into account the differentiation that Shankara Pandit had made the demoniac entities that are put in the hellish planets to undergo their suffering, and those that are in a completely different planet having some kind of opulence but still having a demoniac nature. So taking that into account, the difference seems to be that the demoniac natured, more opulent personalities have been following the Vedic system, but there's that cutoff point that it's not being done to worship Lord Vishnu or Lord Krishna. And it's the same thing with the Brahmanas. You also pointed out, you made that distinction between the Brahmanas that are doing the sacrifices for Lord Vishnu and those that have some cutoff point that the mechanical part is done, but the actual beneficiary of the sacrifice isn't acknowledged. So perhaps that sheds some light.
Yeah, there are certain type of people that that they work, they do everything, they worship, but they do not accept the personality of Godhead. They don't take shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord. So, yeah, that may be somewhere of, you know, understanding this type of thing. But anyway, some worship love Shiva. But yeah, it's you can. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, most of the demons worship Lord Shiva because they have the understanding that Lord Shiva is Asutosh, very easily satisfied. That is the mercy of Lord Shiva. Therefore, he's considered the greatest Vaishnava because he's willing to extend his mercy to anyone and everyone. So the demoniac, the various categories of ghost, other supernatural demoniac beings, they generally take shelter of Lord Shiva, and he fulfills their desires by giving them opulence, powerful bodies, many things. But unfortunately, they're not getting the greatest benefit from Lord Shiva, which is Krishna Prema. Of course, Lord Shiva is capable of giving one pure love of God because he's nearly Vishnu himself. So the demons, knowing that Lord Shiva is very powerful and always surrounded by demoniac, ghostly entities, they take shelter of him. And they regulate themselves through very elaborate systems of worship, and Lord Shiva generally fulfills their desires. And their desires are always within the realm of materialistic sense gratification. I want a powerful body. I want immense gratification. I want the power to dominate others. And Lord Shiva generally gives it. That is his mercy. So yes, most of the demons worship Lord Shiva, and they become empowered by Lord Shiva to do miraculous things.
Okay. Thank you so much. Garantarashimam Bhagavatam ki, Shri Prabhupada ki jai.